Case #264. Dog. For most of his life, Rieirio Hernandez J.D. MCP, an estate tax attorney from Miami, Florida, considered himself a material rationalist. He did not believe in UFOs or the paranormal and scoffed at those who did. In 2012, Hernandez had an experience which caused a complete transformation in his worldview. On March 3, 2012, his 15-year-old Jack Russell Terrier became paralyzed. She had previously been very ill because of severe arthritis and a heart condition. They immediately called their veterinarian, who informed them that Ia had likely suffered a cerebral hemorrhage. Devastated, Hernandez and his wife made plans to euthanize Nina the next morning. That evening, Hernandez's wife, who was Catholic, prayed earnestly for angels to help Ia. The next morning, at 6:00 a.m. on March the 4th, 2012, Hernandez's wife carried Ia downstairs to the living room. Without warning, a small, silver-covered translucent metallic object appeared, hovering in the corner of the room. Realizing her prayers had been answered, she fell to her knees and prayed. She screamed for Rie to come downstairs. When he didn't, she ran upstairs and pulled him out of bed and downstairs to the living room. Hernandez was shocked to see what appeared to be a plasma energy being. The next thing he knew, 45 minutes had passed. Says Hernandez, "I woke up 45 minutes later, where I found my wife celebrating in our living room, and Ia running around like she was a young puppy." Before this miraculous medical healing, Ia was not able to either run or jump because of her severe arthritis and her heart condition. Now she was running around the house in joy, celebrating her new lease on life. Hernandez's wife was overjoyed and told her husband that the angels cured Ia. "This experience felt like an atom bomb blew up in my brain," says Hernandez, "and I was in total shock and confusion. My wife did not know that she had disappeared for 45 minutes. She also did not see the energy being, because she was taken before this plasma energy being appeared. It was a state of total chaos and celebration. Celebration for the miraculous healing of our beloved Ia by what my wife perceived to be angelic intervention." Hernandez was shocked, and immediately began to research what happened to them. He soon discovered that their experience sounded very much like a UFO encounter. Following the experience, both Hernandez and his wife experienced several close-up UFO sightings and other paranormal encounters. In this space of a few months, Hernandez became completely transformed. His life had taken a left turn and he became inspired to research UFOs and the paranormal. 1 year later, he became the co-founder of the Drive Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Experiences, FREE, bringing together leading researchers in the field to study the topics of extraterrestrials, the paranormal and consciousness with a scientific approach. The FREE organization began distributing a worldwide survey to experiencers, collecting first-hand accounts of unexplained experiences. FREE quickly became an influential force in the UFO field. The landmark book, Beyond UFOs, co-edited by Hernandez, was published in 2018. It's the first of a series, and reveals the results of the FREE survey, showing that UFOs and the paranormal are inextricably connected and that the key commonality appears to be the phenomenon of consciousness. While their dog, Ia, died only a few months after the encounter, Hernandez and his wife would never be the same. For another case of a dog healing comes from a woman in Arizona. Like a few of the above cases, the witness has had multiple ET encounters. Case hash 287. Dog. An animal control officer from Arizona. Juju Aluikuata has had encounters her entire life, beginning at least around age 5 when tall greys visited her in her bedroom in Idia, apparently implanting her. Her encounters continued, including in the dream and astral states. She also had a number of very strange UFO sightings. After many years of benevolent contacts with lots of communication of knowledge, Juju considers the ETs her family. In the mid-2000s, she got a dog, Katrina. Juju adored Katrina, and felt almost as though they were soulmates. She became closer to Katrina than any other pet she'd ever had. In 2016, Katrina developed valley fever, a systemic fugal infection that can cause fever, nausea, lung problems, joint pain, inflammation, and more, and in some cases, it can be fatal. At the time, Juju knew that Katrina wasn't feeling well, but she didn't know why. One evening around March 2016, Juju found herself apparently on board a UFO. It looked like the inside of a football, she says. The floor came up and met the ceiling that came down. It was not real sharp, but there was a curve in the wall. The room was dimly lit. She felt no sensation of movement. There was a floor lamp-like device in the corner. Two men stood in the room. One was white-skinned, stocky, with blonde hair and appeared Caucasian. The other was darker-skinned with dark, curly, short hair, and looked almost Italian. Both wore full-length white robes. But what really caught Juju's attention was that the Caucasian-looking man was hunched over her dog, who had her legs up in the air and appeared to be unconscious. Her first thought was that the man was hurting Katrina. Anger swept over her and she took instant action. I saw that he had my dog, says Juju. She was on her back, and she was kind of whimpering. She seemed scared. And I thought this guy was hurting her. So I grabbed what looked like a floor lamp. I grabbed this thing and I was going toward him. Juju had played softball and was ready to knock the guy over when the Italian-looking man stepped in front of her. Hold on, he said, peacefully and calmly. Please just wait 3 seconds. Only then did Juju fully realize what was happening. She was on a craft. These were not humans, but ETs. She realized instantly, she could trust them. She looked down at her dog and was amazed at what she saw. This guy was bringing his hand out of her chest, and she wasn't whimpering anymore. But it was like his fingers extended, and were elongated, and went actually through her body, and he was bringing them back out. And he did this really gently. The man deferentially bowed his head at Juju and allowed her to see Katrina. And I looked down, says Juju, and Katrina. Katrina gets up. She just looks at me. I kneel down to pet her and be next to her, and that was it. It ended. Juju woke up back in her home. She checked on Katrina, who seemed to be fine. However, as the days passed, Katrina still seemed unwell. She decided to take her to the veterinarian, who diagnosed Katrina with valley fever. Katrina loved to dig around in the dirt and it appeared that she had become infected by fungus. Despite treatment, Katrina's health declined and 1 year later, she passed away. Juju believes that the ETs did heal Katrina, keeping her alive during a difficult and important time in Juju's life. I think what they were trying to do was help her, says Juju, because they were so loving and benevolent to me, toward me and her. I truly believe they were helping her. Following Katrina's passing, Juju was contacted by her ET friends who told her that Katrina was actually of ET heritage, as Juju herself was. Finally, it made sense why Juju always felt a special closeness to her. Juju suspects she may have had her own healings and benevolent intervention. Once as a child, she fell down and heard a voice telling her to raise her arms. She obeyed and was shocked to find that the fall hadn't hurt her at all. On another occasion, as an adult, she experienced a sudden degradation of her vision. She went to the eye doctor, who said it was normal and gave her glasses. A month or two later, her vision suddenly improved back to normal. On a third occasion, she had a contact during which she perceived that the ETs were working on her kidneys. As a child, she had some kidney problems. Unfortunately, she couldn't be sure about any of these incidents. The incident with Katrina, however, left a lasting impression. She continues to have experiences with the ETs. I've had the most beautiful, healing, loving lessons from them that help me in my Reiki, how to channel energy. 5. While the healings of animals are rare in comparison to the number of human healings, these cases show us that ETs are doing healings beyond just the motive of maintaining human health. If their care extends to animals and humans, it strengthens the possibility that their agenda is at least partly altruistic. And if healings of humans and animals aren't enough, how about plants? Extraterrestrial Gardeners, in my book, Not From Here, Volume 2, I present a collection of cases in which ETs have intervened to improve the health or accelerate the growth rate of a wide variety of plants. One case, documented by Diane Tessman, occurred in October 1990 to a forestry worker who was employed to care for the forest preserve in County Tipperary in Ireland. While out in the field, the worker saw a UFO appear to land. Shortly later, he was visited by a human-looking man with long hair who said that the poplar trees in the forest were very sick, and then proceeded to give explanations on how to cure various tree diseases. Another case from Tessman's files occurred in June 1991 to ITA of Belfast, Ireland. One evening, a UFO hovered over her garden, sending down a powerful beam of light. The next morning, ITA went outside and discovered that her plants had acquired about 3 weeks of growth overnight, astonishing both herself and her neighbors, whose gardens remained normal. Jax Valley reports on a case which occurred in April 1976 in Redding, California, in which Jean Kirk saw an object hover over an area behind her home. In the months that followed, the weeds where the UFO hovered surpassed all the others in size. Normally, the weed growth reached about 3 or 4 feet. 1 year after the incident, Kirk measured the weeds at an amazing 8 feet. Some of the grass reached a height of 5 feet and was very dense. The accelerated growth continued for one more year before returning to normal. In 1967, the James family of Colorado was growing a carrot by the window in their trailer. One evening, a UFO hovered overhead, sending down a powerful beam of light. The next morning, the carrot, which had just started to sprout before the incident, was completely transformed. Something drastic and truly puzzling had happened to it, said Jerry James, for the carrot did not resemble a carrot any longer. It had spread out, as if having grown for weeks in a tempered professional hothouse. Roots were everywhere, running outside the dish and reaching almost to the floor. 6. These cases, and others like them, indicate that ETs show an interest in the biology of not only humans, but also animals, and even plants. And with their ability to apparently accelerate the growth rate of plants, They show once again their superior understanding of life on our planet. Chapter 26, Friends in High Places. In some cases, ETs provide help in more ways than just a physical healing. Many people believe they have been helped, rescued or saved from tragedy by ETs. This help comes in a surprising variety of forms. In case after case, ETs have literally rescued people from various types of potentially tragic events. What follows are 12 cases in which people were rescued from hazardous and life-threatening situations by ETs. The first case, from R.D. Sixkiller Clark, is a good example of how ETs extend help to people in unexpected ways. Protected from the storm on the east coast of the Yucatan Peninsula is a small Mayan village outside Tulum. In 2004, the village was being battered by hurricane force winds and rain. A resident of the village, Geraldo, and his family were worried about the village being flooded and, like many others, were preparing to evacuate. At this point, a brilliant light appeared and the rain stopped. Overhead, just at treetop level, says Geraldo, there was a UFO. It was round, and it lit up the whole village. The rain stopped. The wind stopped. The UFO was like an umbrella. It was protecting us. For several hours the UFO stayed over our village. When the wind and rains lessened, it moved on. Geraldo says that everyone in the village saw the craft and a few reported abductions. Geraldo asked the Mayan elders what they believed the explanation was. They said the sky gods came back to protect us, says Geraldo. They said our village survived because it was a reminder of the injustice visited upon the Maya people by the Mexican government. One of the leading killers in the United States are automobile accidents. There are several cases in which ETs have healed people of injuries caused by auto accidents after they occurred. There are also cases in which ETs have had the foresight to prevent accidents. UFO prevents automobile accident in 1977/1978, writes the anonymous witness, I was living in Forest Hill, Texas. I was about 21 years old and had BSD my way into a job in which I had no skills. One skill I needed was typing, so I had immediately enrolled in a night typing course which was in Fort Worth, Texas. I was traveling home on I-20 East. There was not much traffic that time of night. In fact, I do not remember any traffic at all, which now seems rather strange to me. All of a sudden, there was a huge light, the brightest light I have ever seen before or since. I slowed down to see what it was, but could only see the light. I then realized what the light was showing me. There was a mattress in the lane ahead of me that I would never have seen, which would have caused me to have an accident. I pulled to the side of the road, the witness says, forgetting about the mattress, and rolled down the window. My first thought was that it was a helicopter, but there was absolutely no sound. When I say no sound, I mean no sound as in any normal sounds of night or traffic, much less a helicopter sound. I wasn't scared. As a matter of fact, I felt a feeling of peace like I have never felt. All of a sudden, the light was gone. The witness went home and called nearby Carswell AFB, who denied any knowledge of unknown aircraft, but still seemed interested and questioned the witness about the sighting. The witness finally reported the sighting to MUFO, after viewing a television program about UFOs. The witness writes, what I experienced back then was the most awesome and peaceful event that anyone could experience. I do not know what it was, but I do know that it was real, very real. Whatever or whoever it was saved me from what could have been a horrible accident. It could not have been something from this earth. 2. One of the most common types of helpful ET intervention is saving people from auto accidents. This second case is a very unusual account in which a woman was saved by MIB-like figures. MIB Prevent Car Accident. An incredible case of helpful ETs occurred in the spring of 1980 to a lady who was driving outside of Cave Junction, Oregon. I somehow got off on a logging road which was winding along a steep mountain, the lady explains. After a while, I noticed that the road was narrowing. Narrowing and I was afraid to follow it any further. I decided to try and turn my car around and drive back to Cave Junction, which was about 30 minutes away. As I was backing up the car, it went off of the road. The rear end was off the road and the car was tottering. I slowly got out and was trying to figure out how to get my dogs out, which were in the kennel in the back of the car. If I tried to reach them, the car could tumble down the cliff. While I was trying to decide what to do, a big car pulled up and four tall Oriental men, with a strange skin tone, too orange, got out of the car. In spite of the 100 plus degree heat of the day, they were all wearing black trench coats. I said, "Hello." They did not reply. Without a word, they went to the front of my car and picked it up, and sat it back on the road, facing the direction back to home. I do not think that even twice that number of humans could have lifted my car from the front end only and placed it back on the road. I do not remember how I got past their car, or they passed mine, as they were headed up the firebreak road, as I was originally as well. The afterthought of the encounter left me really scared, and as soon as I was back in town, I rented a hotel room and slept for a couple of days. Those weird men on the mountain saved our lives, but they still scared me. 3. Another case of helpful ETs comes from Lillian Richter. In her book, Visitors Behind Our Stars, Richter reveals a lifetime of UFO and ET encounters. UFO saves lady from car accident. In 2001, Lillian Richter lived in Southern California. One weekend, she went to visit her mother, who lived out in the desert area. Richter spent some time with her mother. It was almost a 3-hour drive back home, and already almost 4:00 p.m. So she began the return journey. She had been driving for about 15 minutes and was cruising along the highway at about 70 miles per hour when her red engine warning lights began to blink on and off. There were no other cars around her as she began to apply the brake to slow down and pull over. To her shock, the car began to accelerate instead, first up to 80 miles per hour, and then 90. At the same time, water began to pour out from under her hood, which was banging up and down as though it was being hit by the engine. I continued to apply pressure on the brakes, but instead the car started to accelerate again. Now I was moving at a speed of 100 miles per hour. By now, I was starting to panic. Richter tried slamming the brakes down. They had no effect. When she looked at her speedometer, it read 130 miles per hour. At the same time, she realized that the steering wheel had become locked. Certain that an accident was imminent, she began to pray. Immediately the car decelerated to 15 miles per hour and pulled off the road by itself and turned off. It was like someone else had control of my vehicle, Richter says. Shocked, she saw that the movement under the hood had stopped. She put the gear shift into park and tried to start the ignition. The car was now totally dead. The lights, the horn, the engine, nothing worked. The engine had been tuned up 2 weeks earlier with no problems. There were still no other cars on the road, so she tried to use her cell phone. Strangely, The cell phone was also dead. Repeated efforts to get the car or phone to work failed. She sat there wondering what had happened to her car and phone, and what she could do to fix her situation. Movement through the sunroof overhead caught her eyes. She peered upward and couldn't believe her eyes. A huge black craft was hovering mere feet above her car. It flashed a bright white light, temporarily blinding her. When her vision returned, the craft was gone. She tried her phone and car again, but both remained inoperable. Suddenly, she saw that the black craft was back. It hovered about 300 feet away and 10 feet above the ground, featureless and silent, manta ray in shape, and about the size of a house. It had red and white lights on the bottom and a greenish glow in the back. She saw what may have been a porthole or window, but couldn't be sure. She shouted at the craft, blaming it for stranding her. She grabbed her camera. The craft moved forward as though posing, but as she tried to take a picture, the camera malfunctioned. It was a new camera, only 2 weeks old. Richter tried to start the car again when she heard a voice say, "Do not start your car." She felt strangely calm. She tried her cell phone again, but it was still dead. She decided she would get out of her car to take a closer look at the strange craft. "Do not try to get out of your car," the same voice said again, as though somebody was right next to her. "I have to go home," Richter said. "I am afraid to stay here. I need to get back on the highway before it gets dark." The craft didn't respond and Richter had no choice but to sit there and look at it. A few moments later, the voice said, "You can go now." She tried the ignition again and to her amazement, the car engine started normally. And all the dash lights and instruments were working. It was now 5:00 p.m. She had been pulled over for about 30 minutes. As she drove off, she was surprised to see the craft was now pacing her car. She sped up and so did the craft. She slowed down and it slowed down too. It approached to within 150 feet, still cruising only about 10 feet above the ground. "It was so amazing to see this up close," says Richter. "I was never afraid of this craft at all. For some reason I felt secure. It gave me a nice sense that I couldn't put my finger on, but I knew I was safe." It paced her car for another 15 minutes. She sent it a mental thank you, and the craft bobbed up and down, then went straight up at super high speeds, becoming a tiny black dot before disappearing from view. The craft had delayed her journey, but now she could get on the freeway and get home quickly. But as she got on the freeway, she saw that the traffic was badly congested. Suddenly it stopped completely, and looking ahead of her on the road, she saw fire trucks and ambulances with their lights blinking, blocking the roadway completely. There was a very bad accident involving at least 5 cars. She and other drivers exited their vehicles to wait for the rescue crews to clean up the accident. She spoke with the other drivers and learned that the accident had occurred only 15 minutes earlier. "I stood there stunned," says Richter. "All of a sudden it hit me that I would have been in this accident if I hadn't been pulled over. I realized that it could not have been coincidental that the black craft held me back. This black craft had pulled me over for that reason, and saved my life." Richter saw that some of the cars in the accidents were SUVs, and one was the same make, model and color as her own. "It convinced me right then and there that the craft had done this remarkably kind act and saved my life. For it may seem strange that ETs would prevent car accidents. Strange or not, many people are making this claim." The following case is a good example and involves a rare type of encounter that investigators call a car lift case. UFO rescues stranded motorists in the fall of 1959, three friends, all teen. Agers left their homes in Hollywood, California and ended up in Goldfield, south of Tupper, Nevada. One of the witnesses, 14-year-old Bradley, not his real name, had also brought along his girlfriend. Bradley writes that they had pulled off the highway and their pickup became stuck in the sand. Attempts to extricate themselves only ended up burying the truck more deeply, until it was buried up to its hubcaps. The teenagers spent the next few hours trying to dig themselves out, but the sand was too deep. They decided that one of them would have to walk out in the morning and they resigned themselves to spending the night in the desert. The four of them sat in the truck stargazing and talking when the conversation eventually turned to flying saucers. Bradley's girlfriend said, "Let's see if we can contact a saucer to help us." Only half serious and not expecting anything to happen, Bradley and his girlfriend started trying to telepathically contact a saucer. Writes Bradley, "Not long afterward we all saw a light approaching. I don't know the direction it came from. It looked just like a bright star, except it was moving toward us. It got much brighter as it drew overhead. At that moment we felt the truck move. It rose straight up in the air about a foot or two off the ground, floated to the middle of the road, and gently set down. Then the light moved back in the direction it came from and blinked out." At the time, Bradley recalls that they all screamed in fear and left the area. However, 40 years later he was able to contact his former girlfriend. Writes Bradley, "The first thing she said was, 'What do you remember about that night?' We agreed on all the details except I remembered screaming and she remembered laughing." While the case does admittedly have fantastic features, the witnesses have sought no publicity and insisted upon remaining anonymous. Nor did they report the sighting until many years later. 5. Help from ETs comes in many forms. In most cases, intervention comes only in extreme need, to save a person from devastating loss. The following example may be unique in that the purpose for the intervention was to secure the financial well-being of an abductee. ET Employment Agency. In his book, Abducted by Aliens, Chuck Weiss describes his lifelong contact with gray ETs, including numerous healings. While he has had many interactions with the grays, one particular incident stands out above the others. At the time, Weiss had been unemployed for a prolonged period. One evening, he had one of his alien dreams. Writes Weiss, "I was given a sheet of paper by my supervising gray and told to look at it very carefully." As usual, Weiss felt complete deference to the gray and believed that his cooperation with the ET was extremely important. He studied the paper carefully. It showed columns of letters grouped together, along with slashes. "It didn't make any sense to me," says Weiss, "and that's where the dream ended." A few months later, Weiss's employment agency sent him to a company that specialized in copying and dubbing radio and television commercials. Weiss was given the job of reviewer. His duties were to review work orders to make sure they were coded correctly. "After a round of introductions in my new office, I was shown the paperwork that I was expected to proofread. My jaw dropped to the floor when I saw a column of station call letters running down the left side of the paper. It was exactly what I had been shown months earlier by my supervising gray." Weiss was shocked. Had the grays set up this job opportunity for him? Writes Weiss, It was suddenly obvious to me that it had been determined long before I went to work there that I would find employment at that particular company and in that particular office of the company. I was blown away. Aside from a couple of spontaneous healings that I couldn't be sure weren't to just keep their rat running the maze, this was my first real indication that, for whatever reason, I was somehow special to them. I had never heard before of the ETs going out of their way to find a job for an experiencer, nor have I since. After 5 months of working at the company as a temp, I was made a permanent hire with vacations and full benefits. 6 of all the UFO rescue cases, this next example is perhaps the most dramatic, and involves people who were lost at sea. Rescued castaways in the first week of June 1994, an event occurred which up to that time was unparalleled in the history of sea lore. Each year, scores of boats sail in a massive regatta from New Zealand to Tonga. The event attracts sailors from across the world, and this year was no different. Dozens of boats were strung out across the South Pacific Ocean. Some were professional sailors, others were families with little sailing experience. It was an annual event that was supposed to be fun. However, this year, disaster was going to strike. With little warning, the pathway of the race was hit by a storm bomb, a Force 12 storm. In a matter of hours, weather turned from gusty, to nasty, to life-threatening. 1 minute, scores of people were enjoying a nice day of sailing, the next minute, they were fighting for their lives. More than a dozen boats fell into the path of the rogue storm. Each attempted at first to battle the ever-increasing wind and waves. The wind worsened quickly, reaching speeds in excess of 100 knots. And with the wind came waves, reaching at first 50 feet high, then 70, and finally an incredible 100 feet in height. One by one, the boats began to capsize, roll, become demasted, and swamped. Suddenly the Royal New Zealand Navy, the Royal New Zealand Air Force and several other private and commercial boats found themselves embroiled in the single largest South Pacific rescue operation in human history. Dozens of unfortunate people found themselves fighting for their lives in a Force 12 storm. The rescuers quickly surveyed the situation and began to rescue those who were in the worst distress. Those who were severely injured or about to sink were put first on the list. Those who felt they might be able to hang on a few hours longer were forced to continue the constant battles against the screaming wind and terrifying 100-foot waves. The rescuers performed their work quickly and smoothly. One by one, they plucked the helpless survivors from the sea. They knew they had to work quickly before the sea claimed any victims. As they expected, they ran into problems. One problem was locating the boats in the mountainous seas. Because so many boats had their EPIB radio beacons activated, the signals had become crossed, making it impossible for the rescuers to pinpoint the position of many of the survivors. Rescuing the survivors was all but impossible if they couldn't be found. Although the rescuers and survivors were in radio contact, the survivors were not able to give an exact position because of the cloudy skies, mountainous seas, and the fact that all their energy was being spent on trying to stay alive. It was extremely frustrating. Frustrating for both the rescuers and the survivors to be so close, and yet not be able to make physical contact. One of the boats struggling to survive was called the Ramtha. The crew consisted of two members, Bill and Robin Forbes of Australia. Both of them had battled the storm for more than a day. They were badly bruised and completely exhausted. It was only after their sails became stripped and their steering mechanism broke that they decided to radio for help. They were both terrified and knew that they could capsize at any moment. They had to find some way to make their position known and get off their boat. Yet all they could do was pray and continue their struggle for survival. The rescuers assured them that they were on their way, if only the couple could hang on a little longer. As they clung to their bunks inside the small cabin, the couple's attention was drawn to a bright light hovering low in the sky above their boat. At first they thought it was a flare, but there was a strange quality about it. Something had changed, writes Tony Ferrigto, who authored a book about the storm. Something was different. At first Robin had trouble identifying it. Then she realized they were bathed in light. She moved out of the shelter and stared in awe at a green orb that hovered to port, illuminating the angry world about them. She couldn't believe her eyes. It was impossible to pinpoint the exact source of the light. It was unlike anything she'd experienced before, certainly completely different from the lightning that had shattered the darkness earlier in the evening. "Bill, come look at this," said Robin. "What the hell is it?" he asked. Neither knew the answer. They watched the globe of light as it hovered in place a mere 20 feet above their mast. It was obvious to both of them that it was neither lightning nor street Elmo's fire, because the light lasted so long and was so bright. Furthermore, it began changing colors, turning from white to orange, then green to white and back to orange. Bill Forbes was also a pilot and knew that this light was definitely unusual. "I've never seen anything like it," he says. "It's massive. Maybe it's a fireball. It's not lightning. It's just hovering." Meanwhile, unknown to them, the rescuers, the crew of the commercial vessel Mae, were a mere 12 miles away, but still unable to locate the Ramtha. Then suddenly, they saw the light. They too thought at first it was a flare. This caused some obvious confusion. Aboard the Mae, they argued over the possibility of the light being a flare, but the unusual nature of the light caused them to rule out this theory. Nevertheless, the captain ordered that a radio message be sent asking if any nearby boats had launched a flare. Back aboard the Ramtha, Bill and Robin Forbes heard the message and immediately radioed the Mae, saying they had seen the strange light. The rescuers asked if they had launched a flare. They denied it, but said that the light was hovering directly over their boat. The rescuers confirmed the sighting and location of the strange light and recorded the event in the Mae's official logbook. Rescue was impossible until morning, and there were still other vessels in worse distress than the Ramtha. Luck, however, was with the Forbes, and because the Mae was so close and now knew the exact location of the Ramtha, it was decided that they would be rescued first. At dawn, the crew of the Mae executed a quick and efficient rescue, saving the Forbes from what could have been an awful ending. The Forbes had begun their voyage in hopes of reaching spiritual enlightenment. In fact, the name of their boat, the Ramtha, comes from a popular channeler who coincidentally claims to be an extraterrestrial from the Pleiades. It seems clear that a UFO was integral to the Forbes rescue. Afterward, no mention was made of the UFO and its role in the rescue operation. But it was apparent to everyone, however, that something strange had just happened. Although nobody wanted to admit it, it was apparent that a UFO had appeared and accurately pinpointed the exact location of the stricken Ramtha, effectively saving the crew. Why would extraterrestrials concern themselves with the rescue of two people in a sinking boat? Why these two people and not others? Around this time, several miles away, another boat sank, and a young couple lost their lives. Their bodies were never found, nor was any trace of their boat. The only evidence left behind was their empty life raft found skidding over the waves. But as it turns out, there was another boat in the same storm that also had an unusual experience. The boat was called the Heartlight, crewed by Davia Wheeler, her husband and two children. They were all only amateur sailors when they suddenly found themselves caught in the massive storm, sailing a very small boat in 100-foot waves. Davia, however, was a UFO contactee. She has had ET contacts and psychic premonitions her whole life. In fact, before they left on their journey, she had a clear premonition that she and her family would soon have one of the most terrifying experiences of her life. In her premonition, she clearly foresaw that their lives might be in jeopardy and that they would travel to the edge of peril. She confided to her husband, who told her not to worry. They had just recently experienced a severe storm, and he thought that perhaps her premonition had referred to that. He knew better than to simply ignore her visions, they had proved far too accurate in the past. However, he was extremely eager to continue the trip. The weather was perfect. There was no logical reason not to go, except for the premonition. After much discussion, they finally decided to continue their journey and be cautious. A few days out from New Zealand, they noted the worsening wind, and checked back at weather stations. There were no reports of any storm. However, it was obvious the wind was blowing harder and the waves were getting higher. And then, almost instantly, a huge wind swept over their boat and a series of 40-foot waves began battering the hull. The storm had struck with lightning speed, and now they knew that Davia's premonition had come true. As the storm worsened, Davia suddenly felt the presence of her alien visitors. They repeated to her the same message over and over, "The kingdom of heaven is near at hand." The storm became worse, until those aboard the Heartlight knew that they were in peril for their lives. By now they had turned on their EPIB radio beacon and had asked to be rescued. However, they now discovered that there were many others in worse distress and that they were going to have to wait. Shortly later, the boat was knocked down by the waves, turning the cabin into chaos and sending the crew flying into the walls. It was to be the first of many near capsizes. Davia felt the presence of her alien visitors very strongly and began to receive personal messages for each member of the family. Davia shared the messages with each of them. "I have been told we are going into a vortex, that is where we are being taken. The boat is going to go to her spot and your job is to keep her moving." Davia told them how they each had to stay awake and just steer the boat by instinct. She told everyone exactly where to stand and what to do in the event of capsize. She didn't tell them that she had meditated earlier and saw in a precognitive vision the Heartlight sinking beneath the surface of the sea. She knew it was only a matter of time before their boat actually sunk. The waves continued to batter the Heartlight until, suddenly, inevitably, like nearly every boat in the path of the storm, the Heartlight was broached by a wave. Although they didn't capsize, the engines were flooded, the steering mechanism jammed and the hull had a huge crack in it. Almost immediately they began to take on water. The Wheelers were lucky a commercial fishing vessel was only 30 miles away and was able to easily locate their position. They had been forced to wait a long time for rescue, but managed to hold on. By now the storm was beginning to blow itself out. However, the Wheelers were still delighted to see the rescue boat. By the time the boat had pulled alongside the Heartlight, they were all exhausted to the point of unconsciousness. But they were alive, thanks in part to Davia's ET friends. they abandoned their boat, taking with them only a few belongings. Almost immediately, the Heartlight settled lower in the water. In less than a few hours after they abandoned the Heartlight, the Wheelers stood aboard the deck of the rescue ship and watched their boat sink to the bottom of the sea. They knew that if the rescue ship had come only 3 hours later, they would be following the Heartlight to wherever it landed. Incidentally, the Heartlight's original name was the Pleiades Child. The fact that another boat was named the Ramtha may seem to stretch the possibility of coincidence to the limit. And yet, that is not the end of the story. The Wheelers had no idea that a UFO had been seen nearby and was involved in the rescue operations.